hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro.
This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Fresh off hosting last month's Olympic Games, the Brazilian city of Rio de Janeiro now gets ready to stage this week's Paralympics for disabled athletes. The opening ceremony is Wednesday at Rio's Maracanã Stadium, the same stadium where the Olympics officially opened August 5th. More than 4,000 athletes from more than 160 countries will compete at the Paralympics. The United States is sending its largest team ever to the Paralympics. 289 Americans will vie for medals in sports such as wheelchair rugby, sitting volleyball, and goalball. What's goalball? The Voice of America sent reporter Tom Bonsi to find out about this sport designed specifically for people with limited or no eyesight.
Quiet, please. Play.
The three players on each goalball team position themselves in front of their net, which stretches across the back line of the volleyball-sized court. One player takes the 1.5-kilo medicine ball and rockets it low across the court. The ball has bells inside of it that jingle. That's because goalball athletes are all blind or visually impaired. Defenders crouch, reach, slide, or lunge when they hear the ball coming at them. The court is marked off with tactile lines made with masking tape over string so the players can feel where they are.
Goal!
I asked seven-time U.S. Paralympian Jen Armbruster of Portland what sport goalball is most similar to.
Reverse dodgeball.
Reverse dodgeball? I thought of dodgeball, too.
Yeah, reverse dodgeball.
In dodgeball, the object is to avoid the thrown ball. Here in goalball, the defending team puts their bodies in the way of the ball, aimed at the wide goal behind them.
Said it's a much heavier ball going a lot faster. But yeah, your defense is very much a soccer goalie. You know, you're defending and using your body to defend it, and then the underhand motion is like a softball pitcher. You know, it's underhand or sidearm because it's got to be low.
Armbruster says she transitioned to goalball from basketball in her teens when optic nerve degeneration gradually took her eyesight. She says she loves team sports and the team experience.
Being part of a team is usually what draws a lot of people in. It's just that feeling of, like, I do belong here. This is a sport that I can play, and I can play with my sighted friends because guess what? I can slap a blindfold on them and take them out here.
Armbruster's teammate, Ileana Mason, is a senior at Portland State University. Mason says she was introduced to goalball at a sports camp for visually impaired kids during high school.
I honestly wasn't that into goalball at first. Then my first practice, they just kind of like hammered me with balls. And afterwards, I kind of looked at my dad and I was like, you know, I don't know if I really like this. Like,
she was a gymnast and I saw her and said, hey, you're athletic. You really should try. And she's like, yeah, okay, whatever.
I just wanted to do handstands on the court.
Mason was born with cataracts and glaucoma, giving her blurry vision. Because goalball players have varying levels of sight, they all wear blackout eye masks, so everyone is equally blind on the court. Mason says the competitive aspects of the game eventually hooked her.
I just fell in love with the sport. We play it so much that, like, you have dreams about playing the sport. Like, after a training camp, I'll, like, wake up with my hands in the air, like, trying to block a ball in my sleep.
Goalball was invented in Europe right after World War II to help blinded veterans stay active. It's now played worldwide. It became a medal event at the Paralympic Games in 1976. 10 women's and 10 men's goalball teams qualified for this year's games in Rio de Janeiro. The U.S. women may be tested by Canada, Turkey, China, and Japan. The Japanese women won gold in London in 2012. Russia will not be at the Rio Games because their entire Paralympic team was excluded due to doping allegations.
Quiet, please. Center.
Spectators have to be quiet during matches so the players can hear the ball, which might make things interesting in Brazil, where the fans have a boisterous reputation. The troubled economy in the host city and country has forced budget cutbacks and consolidation of Paralympic Games venues, but all planned sports will still be contested. Five-time Paralympian Asia Miller says she followed the Olympic Games in Rio to get a sense of what she's in for.
I'm not expecting to go down there to stay in a five-star resort. I know that, you know, so I don't, you know, I'm going down there to play. I'll deal with whatever's thrown at me while I'm there, but I'm really going down there to play.
The U.S. women enter the Rio Paralympics as the defending world champions in goalball. Their first game is against host country Brazil on September 8th. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi in Portland, Oregon.
Voice of America!
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
The field is now set for next year's Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Gabon after the final weekend of qualifying action. First, let's run down the 16 qualifiers in alphabetical order, and then we'll take a look at the weekend results. The teams that advanced to Gabon 2017 are Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Democratic Republic of Congo, Egypt, Gabon, an automatic qualifier as host, Ghana, Guinea-Bissau, Ivory Coast, Mali, Morocco, Senegal, Togo, Tunisia, Uganda, and Zimbabwe. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to the Cranes of Uganda. This is the first time they've qualified for the Nations Cup Finals since they were runners-up to host Ghana way back at the 1978 tournament. Burkina Faso and Uganda finished atop Group D in Nations Cup qualifying with 13 points each from six matches. In results Sunday, Uganda defeated the visiting Comoros Islands 1-0 in Kampala on a goal by 18-year-old Standard Liège midfielder Farouk Mia. Meanwhile, in Ouagadougou, host Burkina Faso beat Botswana 2-1. Let's go to the other groups now. In Group A, Tunisia was top of the table with 13 points, followed by Togo with 11 points, and they're both going to Gabon next year. Both teams scored big victories at home on Sunday. The Carthage Eagles of Tunisia topped the Lone Stars of Liberia 4-1, and the Sparrowhawks of Togo sank Djibouti Shoremen of the Red Sea 5-0. In Group B, the DR Congo topped the table with 15 points, and the Congolese Leopards get the group's one ticket to Gabon. In results from the weekend, the DR Congo defeated the visiting Central African Republic 4-1 in Kinshasa, while host Angola and Madagascar played to a one-all draw in Luanda. In Group C, Mali is going to Gabon after finishing atop the table with 16 points. In results Sunday, Mali beat visiting Benin 5-2 in the capital, Bamako, and host Equatorial Guinea was a 4-0 winner over South Sudan. In Group D, I already mentioned how Burkina Faso and Uganda earned tickets to Gabon. In Group E, Guinea-Bissau finished with 10 points, 1 point more than Congo Brazzaville, and advances to Gabon 2017. In results Sunday, Congo Brazzaville beat visiting Guinea-Bissau 1-0, while hosts Zambia and Kenya played to a 1-1 draw. In Group F, the Atlas Lions of Morocco finished on top of the table with 16 points after a 2-0 victory Sunday over Sao Tome and Principe in Rabat. So the Moroccans are going to Gabon. In the other group match Saturday, Libya scored a 1-0 road victory over the Cape Verde Islands. In Group G, seven-time Nations Cup champion Egypt is going to Gabon after finishing on top of the table with 10 points. Originally, this group had four teams in it: Egypt, Nigeria, Tanzania, and Chad. However, at the end of March, it was announced that Chad withdrew for financial reasons, meaning the group runners-up could no longer advance as one of the two runners-up with the best records. In the only group match from the weekend, Nigeria beat visiting Tanzania 1-0 in Uyo on a goal by Manchester City man Kelechi Iheanacho in the 79th minute. After the match, Nigeria's captain, John Obi Mikel, saluted the fans at Akwa Ibom International Stadium in Uyo.
I think it's obvious. You can see the support that the fans showed today. I mean, the fans, I will have to say, on behalf of the team, on behalf of the players, we really appreciate the support today. The support today was really, really amazing. And I think it gave the players the confidence to play. And you can, like the coach, like he said, you know, I think we played really well today, created lots of chances, but we couldn't score for some reason. But then at the end of the day, we got one goal. The support was amazing. I just hope the support keep going like this. Now that we're going to go into the World Cup qualifiers, we need the support even more so that the fans will be behind us. I think the players need this. And for me, I just have to keep doing what I'm doing. I think the Olympic was a great success for us, to get as a country, not just me as an individual. I think a lot of players from the Olympic team are here, and I think without the success that we had, they wouldn't be here. So it's very interesting. There's a mix of young and experienced players now, so we have to keep going. I think we're going upwards now, so we pray that the fans keep supporting us.
Nigeria captain John Obi Mikel speaking after his team's 1-0 victory over Tanzania in an Africa Cup of Nations qualifier. Meanwhile, Tanzania's head coach, Charles Mkwasa, had this to say after his team's loss.
We knew that we were out of the clash, I mean out of the tournament, but our objective was to give the people from this state a good football, which they saw in the game. But we take this opportunity to congratulate Nigeria Super Eagles for the win. It was very very difficult for them to get it. Easy win, as we said here when we came from Tanzania, that they are not going to win, but it's not going to be very easy game. So this is the way. This is our new team now. We took this game very seriously. That's why you saw our game was like that. So this is our new team we are trying to build. And this is the first match. Some players, this is their first match to play. And actually, we have only one professional, our team captain. And we had very little time for training ourselves. So we trained only for 2 days before we arrived here. The trip, you know, is very far. But my boys, they played very well. Very entertaining game. You witnessed the game.
That's Charles Mkwasa, the head coach of the Taifa Stars, Tanzania's national football team. And thanks to reporter Tony Tamino in Nigeria for recording that audio for us. Tony, if you're listening to the show this evening, yes, it met all the technical, and statistical needs of the program. Technical, tactical, and statistical. You go, Tony. Back to the Nations Cup groups. In Group H, Ghana is going to Gabon after topping the table with 14 points, 7 points better than Mozambique and Rwanda, and 8 points better than Mauritius. In results from the weekend, Ghana and visiting Rwanda played to a 1-1 draw in Accra, and host Mozambique edge Mauritius 1-0 in Maputo. In Group I, Ivory Coast tops the table with 6 points, followed by Sierra Leone with 5 points and Sudan with 4 points. The elephants of Ivory Coast are going to Gabon. In a result from the weekend, host Ivory Coast and Sierra Leone play to a one-all draw in Bouaké. In Group J, the Desert Foxes of Algeria top the table with 16 points, and they're going to Gabon. In results from the weekend, the Desert Foxes kicked sand in the faces of Lesotho. They spanked Lesotho 6-0. And in the other group match, Ethiopia beat visiting Seychelles 2-1. In Group K, the Lions of Teranga from Senegal were clearly the top team, finishing with 18 points to qualify for Gabon 2017. In results from the weekend, Senegal beat visiting Namibia 2-0 in Dakar, and host Niger beat Burundi 3-1. In Group L, the Warriors of Zimbabwe finished on top with 11 points, and they're going to Gabon. In results Sunday, Guinea beat visiting Zimbabwe 1-0 in Conakry, and host Malawi edged Swaziland by that same 1-0 scoreline. Finally, in Group M, the indomitable Lions of Cameroon topped the table with 14 points to book their ticket to Gabon 2017. In results from the weekend, Cameroon beat visiting Gambia 2-0, and host South Africa and Mauritania played to a one-all draw. The 2017 Africa Cup of Nations tournament is scheduled to kick off January 14th and go through February 5th. Joining us here in Washington once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Happy Monday and sporty greetings, Andrew.
Happy Monday to you as well, and sporty greetings to you as well, Sonny.
Andrew, what's trending in the sports world today?
Well, we got a couple of stories that are cross-sport stories. I always like these because they involve multiple sports, which is, you know, the more the merrier. The first one is, you know, we've been talking about all last week Colin Kaepernick, the San Francisco 49ers quarterback, and his protest during the national anthem. And we've been talking about other football players have been joining in. Well, now we have, I think it's the first cross-sport athlete, non-football player, to show solidarity. And I think the first woman as well, and that's Megan Rapinoe, the U.S. Women's National Team soccer player. She was actually at a National Women's Soccer League game in Chicago the other night, and she took a knee during the national anthem, as Colin Kaepernick has been doing during the preseason football games. And they asked her afterwards if that was a way to show solidarity with him. And she said it was. She said any when a chance she can get to draw attention to issues that the country is facing, she will do that. She even tweeted out, she said, it's the least I can do to keep the conversation going. So she, I believe, is, like I said, the first female athlete to do so. Certainly the first, I think, soccer player to do so as well, to show solidarity with Colin Kaepernick.
As you said last week, Andrew, this topic will not be going away, especially with the National Football League season kicking off. And it seems like some of Kaepernick's teammates on the 49ers are joining him now when they kneel prior to a game.
Absolutely, yeah. You're seeing, I think, more and more players engage in this. I think we're going to see more and more players as the football season kicks off. And outside even of the world of sports, you had President Obama weighing in today. He was asked at the G20 summit about this, and he said it's Kaepernick's right to do this. He doesn't think that it's his way of showing disrespect to anyone. It's his right as an American to express himself in this way. So even the president weighing in on this. Of course, President Obama is a huge sports fan, so it was only a matter of time, I think, before this question came up, being something that deals with the national anthem and athletics.
President Obama, yes, indeed, a very big sports fan. Maybe he's even watching some of that tennis in New York City, Andrew.
I think he is. I wouldn't be surprised if he was. And we'll talk about the tennis in a bit. But the other cross-sports story I want to talk about is gymnastics and baseball. Now, you wouldn't think that these two things would align necessarily, but it's that first pitch that we've talked about. We had Katie Ledecky here in Washington, D.C., who threw out the first pitch at the Nationals game, and we had two gold medal winning Olympians, Lori Hernandez and Madison Cochin, from the women's team, the U.S. women's team that won gold. They're throwing out the first pitches. Lori Hernandez throwing out the first pitch at the New York Mets game, my New York Mets that I love so dearly. She does this cartwheel flip before she throws out the pitch and throws it and does a pretty decent job of throwing the pitch out there. Certainly an amazing gymnastics move before that.
Well, if I could correct you just a little bit, Andrew.
Yes.
I understand a cartwheel, you actually use your hands, whereas what Lori did was called an aerial.
An aerial. Okay, thank you.
An aerial. She didn't use her hands. She just literally did a flip in the air.
That is exactly right. And I'm glad you clarified that, because it's actually a lot of people on social media saying it is a cartwheel kind of flip, but that is true. She didn't use her hands. Case in point, she had the baseball in her hands the whole time, which is just awesome that she had that. Madison Cochin, of course, she's a bar specialist. She did this kind of bar move where she lifted her legs up in the air, kind of stood on her hands, flipped over, picked up the baseball, and threw it right over the plate as a strike. So kudos to them for some really creative first pitches. They got a lot of play on social media, attracted a lot of attention. I saw the video clips posted multiple places, but a very cool way. They weren't wearing the medals, though. If they were wearing the medals and trying to do those flips, that might be dangerous.
That might be dangerous.
Smack themselves in the face with the medals. But no, they were very, very impressive first pitches for these two young ladies.
And Lori Hernandez did that aerial at Citi Field, very close to where the U.S. Open tennis is taking place.
Yeah, big night last night at the U.S. Open. And with the Mets, it's about just a mile away from the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center is Citi Field, where the Mets play. And they're playing the Nationals, which is a big matchup in the National League East. But the U.S. Open, we have a lot of great underdog stories this year, starting with Luca Puy beating Rafael Nadal in five sets. It's probably, I think, the best match of the tournament so far.
I agree with you. That was a tremendous match.
A little over four hours that they played. And Luca Puy, no S at the end. It's a silent S. Luca Puy, one of these rising stars in tennis.
One of three Frenchmen last eight, is that correct?
Yep, one of three Frenchmen into the quarterfinals. I think they said it's the first time since 1927, so certainly the first time in the Open era, so great for French tennis. And then you have players like Anastasia Sevetsova of Latvia. She actually took about a year and a half off from tennis. She retired between May 2013 and January 2015, and then she said, you know what, I've getting through my injuries, I'm going to come back. And she is into the quarterfinals now after beating Garbiñe Muguruza, who won the French Open, and Joanna Konta, who's the number 13 seed at this tournament. Now she's going to play Caroline Wozniacki. Caroline Wozniacki beat Madison Keys, the eighth seeded American. Caroline Wozniacki, a former number one, she's down to world number 74. So she's making a comeback after falling after some injuries and things. So whoever wins this matchup is going to go to the semifinals, whether it's Caroline Wozniacki or Sevetsova. It's going to be a historic moment for them and a huge career bump for them. So really great for them. And even Juan Martín Del Potro just won his match when his opponent Dominic Thiem retired. He's another person who's been beset by injuries, who's made a comeback. He's now into the quarterfinals. So a lot of great success stories at the Open this year.
I think Del Potro's had like 3 surgeries on his wrist.
And the photo on social media, it said 18 months ago, this is where he was, and he had a big cast on his arm. So 18 months later, he's into the quarters at the U.S. Open.
Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. And that wraps up the September 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Keith Holmes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A quarter century of civil war, exacerbated by the rise of the violent Al-Shabaab terror group and cyclical droughts of historic proportions, has seen wave after wave of Somalis leaving their home country. Today, some 463,000 Somalis are living as refugees in camps in neighboring Kenya. In many respects, the conditions in Somalia have been steadily improving. The government and economy are taking shape. Somali security forces are emerging, and Al-Shabaab has steadily lost territory due to the combined actions of the Somali government, international partners, and the African Union Mission in Somalia, or AMISOM, forces. And thanks to the tripartite agreement of 2014, refugees have been making their way home from Kenya. However, the country, its people living in Somalia and abroad, as well as repatriating refugees, are still in dire need of humanitarian help. So the United States is stepping up, said Secretary of State John Kerry during his recent visit to Kenya. I am pleased to announce that the United States will be providing an additional $117 million more in support for refugees, returnees, and drought victims in the region, raising our total assistance just for this year to $265 million. And we will also contribute an additional $29 million to the UNHCR's new supplementary appeal in support of the safe and voluntary return of refugees to Somalia. This sum includes new humanitarian assistance of more than $87 million in food and non-food help for refugees and drought victims in Kenya and Somalia. Working through a number of humanitarian organizations, the United States will also provide aid and help improve conditions across Somalia, particularly in hard-to-reach areas of south-central Somalia. This aid includes support shelter, water sanitation, and hygiene, health, and nutrition, and livelihoods programs for returnees in accessible areas of return. The United States remains committed to helping address the serious humanitarian concerns in Somalia and continued protection and assistance for refugees in Kenya and elsewhere in the region, and continues to urge the international community to contribute more resources to humanitarian appeals to support durable solutions for Somali refugees.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Yes, sir.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.